when we place the tool above the purpose of the tool. That's where we start to run into issues. I can create metrics for myself so that I can get more of that good feeling. I think that's what we end up using a lot of those success metrics for, is we don't actually use them in pursuit of the end goal of building God's kingdom and sanctification. They may start out that way, but what we end up doing is we get distracted, and then the focus becomes the tool that we use to get there instead of the actual destination that they were designed to help us reach. Hello and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, David Rathemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And in case you didn't listen to last week's episode, for one thing, you should go back and listen to it, because this episode is going to be kind of dovetailing off of that conversation that we had with Nathan Rittenhouse. And to be truly honest, Jonathan, I as much as I love our conversations, I think whenever you add Nathan into the mix, the level of usefulness and just overall quotability and just overall intelligence just goes way, way up.
The man has a genius for analogy. I have never in my life met anybody who can pull more analogies out faster that make more sense than Nathan Rittenhouse. And so I feel like my speech is gray compared to the bright, you know, full color conversations that Nathan has because of the amount of analogies he pulls out. So yeah, definitely.
Seriously, yeah. So go listen to that conversation. It really strikes at the heart of a lot of what we tried to talk about here at the Be Unbound podcast, and make sure that you go listen to their podcast as well. But in today's episode, Jonathan and I were just thinking about what we talked about with Nathan, and a lot of that conversation just ended up centering around metrics and how we end up measuring whether or not we are successful, or just whether or not we are living a fulfilling life, and how we go about trying to do that better, trying to get more of what is going to help us to feel fulfilled. And that really got us thinking. So, Jonathan, you and I were talking a little bit about kind of our different theses at the beginning before we hit record. So I'll let you kind of dive into that thought that you had.
Not a thesis, but then, David, you said something right before we started recording that I want to explore a little bit more. So we'll come into that. So, but the background, let's set this up a little bit. So the background would be this. I'm convinced that all human action is preceded by an idea. And so, but I'm also convinced that most people are unaware of the idea, meaning that most people are sleepwalking in the sense that they are taking actions that is driven by an idea that they have not examined, that they have subconsciously absorbed. And so we talk about this a lot with our students. To live fully awake and fully alive is at some level to have an understanding and awareness of the ideas that are driving your life. And then you should make conscious decisions about whether those are good ideas. Well, in that category, I think that one of the ideas that has been absorbed in our culture is that the only legitimate answer to what you do with your life has to be measured primarily from an economic standard or from a fortune standard. And of course, we talk about this a lot of the podcast, that, you know, a success standard, fame, fortune, or power. And so that means that most people think that they fall in this default category. What do you want to do with your life? If I ask you what you want to do with your life, 99.9% of people will answer with an economic answer. I'm going to be A, and they'll state a vocation. And then subconsciously, everybody around them and themselves will judge your success in that vocation by the size of their paycheck and the outward manifestation of that paycheck in terms of the car they drive, the house that they live in, the things that they do. But there are some people that'll say, oh no, I'm not materialistic like that. I'm going to do something service related. And they're going to do ministry or something like that. And subconsciously, the metric that they will then go after is, how big is the church? How many people are you taking care of? How many books have you published? I mean, like, they'll still get to this metric. And so the question there is, like, okay, why is it that we default to this idea that satisfaction and success in a worthwhile life should be measured primarily in economic means? And that manifests itself in all kinds of problems, like, you know, it makes sense to move for a job even if you got a really good community. You'll choose the church after you choose where you live because of your job, all those kind of things. Okay, that could be really fascinating. We might come back and talk to that. But David, you said something that we explored a little bit with Nathan, which is the problem is metrics. And I agree, but I'm struggling with this, and this is a thinking out loud thing here, where it's like, I started down this path a little bit with Nathan. I didn't like it, which is kind of like, okay, is metrics a sort of product of the enemy in terms of a distraction, right? Like, in other words, I'm going to divert you from the things that you ought to do. So maybe the way we can express this is that relationships are good, so I'm going to prioritize relationships. And the next thing that happens is, like, ideally you would have 10 close relationships, 3 really close relationships, and 25 friends. And all of a sudden I've got a spreadsheet going, boy, I'm 3 friends short in the close category. You know what I mean? Like that feels like a diversion. At the same time, I don't want to say that numbers, I mean, I'd be tempted to say this because of my brain, numbers are from the enemy, right? You know, like, in terms of, you know, math and stuff like that. That's obviously not the case. It's a really important tool. So it is metrics are the problem, and yet metrics are necessary for a lot of things. So is it how we measure? Is it what we're measuring? Is it measuring at all? Because then this brings up these really interesting points. Okay, well, if you don't make decisions off this economic idea, what idea are you making decisions off of? We probably have some obvious answers to that. And then how do you measure that success? And then we get into some really interesting stuff. So
yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. But first of all, like, I think to just kind of reinforce my assertion would just be that for trying to find your worth as a Christian, metrics are completely counterintuitive. Just full stop. I mean, if you just think about one of the, you know, confessions of, you know, the Westminster Catechism of what is the chief end of man, to honor and glorify God and to enjoy him forever. Like, there's not really any, like, practical measurability about that. Like, you could try to, like, come up with measurability.
But you get, I agree, but wouldn't that be the first thing we'd do? Okay, to enjoy him forever is a finish line. Got that. Okay. So, but to honor and glorify God. Okay. So if the chief aim of my life is to honor and glorify God, isn't the most natural thing for me to do to ask the next question would be, how do I honor God? Okay. So let's answer that. You honor God by, what's your first answer, David?
By obeying his commandments. Let's go with that.
So I honor God by obeying his commandments. Well, I know from my own personal life that sometimes when I've been struggling with particular sins, one of the ways to kind of exert some discipline over that is to literally create a spreadsheet and count the days I've not succumbed to temptation. Right? So now I have this metric. It's like, well, I've honored God by obeying his commands by not breaking them, right? You know, or so I mean, there's a, and I don't know that's completely wrong. Obviously, that's a little bit of, but the question would then be, how do I know if I'm honoring and obeying God enough? You know, does that make sense? Yeah, like, how do I decide how I'm making progress in that?
Yeah, I think the issue is that metrics in and of themselves, and just like what you're talking about, like using a spreadsheet, I think that's a useful tool. And the problem comes in when we place the tool above the purpose of the tool. That's where we start to run into issues, is, you know, to just go with your example of just like keeping track of a spreadsheet. If the ultimate goal of that is just to help you to have a reminder of the fact that thanks to the Spirit's help and the practical steps that you have been working to take, that you've been able to see more and more success and of your temptation, and you're able to praise God out of that. And if your focus is on the end goal, then that's wonderful. I think that's a great use of that tool. If then you start, however, obsess over, okay, well, I've hit like this certain streak, and if I'm able to just like optimize this a bit better, and you start focusing so much on the tool, and you get so focused on how can I just carry this over, like I could systematize a whole bunch of other ways, and I could like create for myself ways that I can see and feel like I am becoming more holy. I can create metrics for myself so that I can get more of that good feeling. I think that's what we end up using a lot of those success metrics for, is we don't actually use them in pursuit of the end goal of building God's kingdom and sanctification. They may start out that way, but what we end up doing is we get distracted, and then the focus becomes the tool that we use to get there instead of the actual destination that they were designed to help us reach.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. So let's push this like down more. I think that's good theoretical stuff. Let's push this down a little more practical line in some fashion. So let's pick, you know, any family, kind of normal family, USA. So that's what we're recording. And it's like, well, let's start asking questions. Where do they? Why do they live where they live? Okay, well, there could be a couple answers to that. But the one that's generally the most common is because that's where they work. And so it's like, okay, well, why do they work there? Because that's where they found the job. So we have this kind of economic base again. Now, I want to be careful. That's necessary, right? I mean, my parents left a place because there were no jobs, right? So there is a negative push here that, I don't know that they had a lot of options. They certainly didn't think that they did. And so it was necessary to move. So there are times when economic forces become the predominant ones. But for a lot of Americans, I don't know that that's entirely the case. I think that there's a presumption that you must move to where the job is, and then you build everything else around that. And so if we're saying, well, that's an interesting idea. So first of all, we pulled that idea out and looked at it. So I guess the first question is that a good idea? I mean, do you think that that's an idea that has merit in terms of being one of the driving factors for deciding your life?
See, and this is where I, again, just kind of go to, like, what's the heart behind the decision? Is that I think, the natural answer that a Christian would tend to come up with when asked just, why are you like living to this, moving to this place? Like sort of the spiritual answer that just about any of us would give is, well, that's where God is calling me to be. And then that's where you end up getting the question of, okay, well, how do I know what God is calling me to? And, how do I tell whether that's just where God is leading me versus just where my own personal inclinations are leading me to? And then there you can just end up going in circles over just, how do I like fully make sure that I, as much of my own desires are out of the way, but while still trying to keep in mind that God has given me certain inclinations and wisdom in trying to make that decision. And I think when we ask stuff like that, we're a lot of the times just looking for just a straight and narrow, just categorical, like, is moving for a job a good thing or not? Like, we're just looking for just a straight yes or no answer. And my response to that would be maybe. Probably in just my understanding of the Christian life is that sometimes the way that God will move you to the place that he has you is with a job, and other times he may not. And I think the question, the more helpful question that I think you can go to that is a lot less cut and dry of yes or no, and takes a lot more reflection and prayer and consideration with the people who love and know you well, is what is the heart motivation behind this move? Is the move for a different job something that is motivated by primarily care for your family, and just a desire to, be able to be in a position where you're able to do that, and God is presenting you with evidence to support that this is what this is going to be a healthy spot for you and your family? Or is it primarily driven out of a fear mindset of, I don't know whether or not we're going to hit, say, for example, the financial metrics that I have in mind for myself? I'm scared that, my kids aren't going to be able to get the education that I want for them. And so there's, yeah, I don't even know if I'm answering this in a way that's actually helpful, but I think the more that we try to look for just the cut and dry, easy answers for things like this, the less that we actually end up focusing on what's actually important. Traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend. Did that make sense at all?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, and I understand what you're saying. And I think your answer is maybe it does make sense. I mean, because there's some factors, but I think maybe I can help because I don't know that it's so much a cut and dried answer as it's a priority answer. There's ideas that are invisible here that are driving the priorities. And I think priorities are sometimes a helpful way to think of things. So let's take a sort of side trail and come back. There's a lot of things, and it may be just because I'm old and grumpy, but there's a lot of things that just annoy me that I call into question about business. And one of them is, first of all, I really despise HR departments, and I just try never to miss a chance to say that. It has nothing to do with what I'm saying afterwards. I just want to make sure that I get a little platform for it. And the second thing is that I really don't like mission statements. Because I feel like mission statements, the heart behind them makes sense, but I feel like they're almost always crafted for reasons that sort of obliterate the reason you had the mission statement in the first place. And so there's, I'm not saying you can never do it, but I've just never really felt one that anybody really kind of tied into and made sense.
Okay, I feel like we need to take this opportunity here, Jonathan. How is our mission and value statement different? How does ours kick that trend?
Well, I don't think that when I mean mission statements, I mean the invisible one that you put in all the staff, you know, this is going to be a place where blank, 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 blank. Yeah. So different than a tagline, right? Okay. So it's like that kind of internal, you know, rah, rah, get the troops going up mission statement that almost always is, you know, focus group to death, right? I think far more practical is to have a set of priorities for a company. So I just recently, for another company David and I are involved with, that we run, that we went in and talked to the staff and we kind of set up some things. I said, here's the priorities. And we do this for Unbound as well. So at Unbound, we say our number one priority is to build the kingdom. So that gives us a kind of a baseline. Like, you know, every decision we make has to make sure that we are running with the things we think Christ has called us to and not against it. And, you know, I don't know that we get a ton of temptations to just run against what we think Christ's commands are, but there's more subtle things there saying like, you know, are the things that we're doing done in a way that glorifies God? Is it the way we got, you know, there's a requirement to bathe things in prayer and think about it, stuff like that. So it's just a reminder. Priority number one is to build the kingdom. Priority number two is to take care of our people. Now that's where most people go, wait, stop, hold on a second. But I think if it's to build the kingdom, then part of building the kingdom is taking care of people. And at Unbound, the people that I get the most chance and everybody else gets the most chance to take care of is the ones that we see the most. And the people that we see the most are the people we work with. So taking care of our people has to be our second priority, and one of the primary ways that we build the kingdom is how we treat each other in this company, interpersonally, professionally, and how we enable them to do other things in their life. And then our third priority is to take care of our clients, our students, our customers. Now, there's an inherent truth here that we can't take care of our people unless we take care of our customers. And so that's not in any way to say that we're going to skimp on customer service, but it is to say that we ask questions like, if we can enroll 10,000 students tomorrow, which we can't, but if we could, would that take care of our people? And the answer would emphatically be no. I mean, like it would, you know, everybody would jump ship, right? Because I'd be like, but there's things there. It's like we could do things to make more money, or we could do things that would actually serve students better. But there may be times where doing that would actually abuse our people because we're taking advantage of them, or make their lives miserable because of the responsibilities that we'd have to do with that. Or you know, there's some nuance in there that we have to think through with that stuff. Okay. So, and that set of priorities, coming back to what you're saying, David, I think it might be helpful to say the invisible idea here is that the mission statement for our lives is to have a good career. And nobody's ever really sort of thought back, like, why is that? And I think, like, you know, here's one we could test out, right? Priority one is to honor Christ and follow Christ, okay? Priority two is to take care of my family, being that the people that are closest to me. And priority three is to do well at whatever God calls me to do. Or we might say priority three is to richly contribute to my church, and priority four might be to do well. Okay, now all of a sudden, that's really interesting, because I think what happens here, let's say that we just stuck with the three just for the sake of argument here. Now it's like, okay, well, I'm going to honor Christ in everything I do. Okay, well, that's a baseline behavior type thing. And that means I take care of the people he's given me, take care of in my family. And so, you know, you're in a situation where it's like, hey, I have a great job that's going to double my salary and triple my prestige in another state. And this actually happened to me, right? And so should you move? Well, I could, and that would be good, and that would be kind of the unseen priorities. But it would mean that my children never see their grandchildren, their grandparents again, or only once a year. It would mean that they would have to leave all the – okay, well, now all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't know. If my second priority is to take care of my family, that's not a great way to take care of my family. But we can set up a different way. We are really in dire straits here. We can't do things that we need. My children don't have the opportunities that they need because economically we're just stuck and we're starving to death. To take care of my family, I'm going to have to move two states away and take another job, even though it means taking them away from their grandparents and even though it takes them taking away from this community. But that's what's necessary because with the skills God's given me and the opportunities in front of me, this is what I have to do. And that describes what my dad had to do, right? And so in his case – but my dad did do that, not because it was a great job opportunity for him. It was. But he did it primarily because he didn't want to leave. This is a place he had grown up in, his father had grown up in. Like, he had deep, deep roots to the land and the place. But he felt that the best way to take care of his family was to move to this new location. And I benefited from that tremendously. Anyhow, that's the kind of thing that I think about. Like, I don't know that we have to make to your sometimes answer, I think that's correct. But it might be helpful for us to step back and say, let's look at these invisible ideas, make them visible, and perhaps just take a moment to rank them and say, why am I making these decisions? And the reasons for making those decisions, do they make sense? And then I'm going to have to make the decision. And that decision is going to be as unique as the people that are making them. But there's a structure there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think thinking in terms of priorities is really helpful because this is something that, I've talked about with other people that it seems like a lot of the time people who I would think that I would agree with on just about everything, especially people of faith, it seems like even if we agree on a lot of things theologically, for example, but then we would just look at a life decision that's coming up and just have completely opposing views on it. You know, one person looks at it and says, yeah, makes perfect sense. I think that's the right thing to do. And the other purity is looking at it going like, are you crazy? That's completely wrong. And a lot of the time, it's not because we disagree on the actual morals. A lot of the time, we share the same morals. It's just one of those priorities is switched. And so, you know, for some people, it might be just taking care of your family versus being part of a local church community or something like that, like somewhere those get shuffled a little bit or something like that. And you'll see that a lot of the time in life is that even if you share the same values, the order in which you prioritize them will tend to get switched around. And so I think circling all the way back around to something that you have said before is just that thinking about these things consciously is something that I think could serve us really well. Just so many of us will go around and be completely befuddled by the fact that people have different perspectives than us when we think that they should have similar ones. And I think it can be really helpful to take a very practical look at how you actually prioritize things and say, okay, in this framework, this actually makes sense and can actually end up helping you making some of those decisions when it ends up being confusing too.
Well, I think one of the things the advantage that prioritization gives as well is that I think you've talked about humility and the importance of humility. I think it removes this mandate for you to I think what happens is if you don't do the priority thing, then you take your experience and you infer this is what people ought to do. And you start to even unwittingly put a moral. So now there's an assumed idea there and you're putting a moral weight behind it. So I could say, I had an opportunity to increase my salary and my prestige, and I didn't do it to take care of my family, which can be very self-righteous sounding of me, right? And so consequently, anybody who moves their family for a job is obviously doing something wrong, and they haven't prioritized their family correctly. Okay, well, that breaks down if you sort of take a step back and say, the only reason that I have the ability to make that decision is that my father made the opposite decision. and that many years ago, he decided to leave everything he knew and all of his relationships and all of his cousins and all of his land and everything else that he had and go someplace else because he was prioritizing his family first because he thought that the move would give better opportunities for his family. And as somebody who benefited from that, that's the case. And so my desire to say everybody should live like me would make me a hypocrite immediately since my dad didn't, and that gave me the opportunity to do it. But if we return it to priorities, we actually did the same thing. If the priority is to take care of our family, my dad made the decision to move because he thought it was the best thing to do to take care of his family. And I made the decision to not move because I thought it was the best decision to do to take care of my family. And now all of a sudden there's a logic to that I think is helpful in terms of a set of ideas that I think are helpful and useful and can be applied, but doesn't mean that it gives everybody the same outcome, but it does give people maybe a bit of a structure to think about. And, you know, I think that we may not argue, but the number one priority is to follow Christ. After that, you know, I don't know that I want to get super dogmatic about saying exactly what the next priorities are because it could be different, right? If you're a single person, taking care of your family means your extended family. That is not unimportant, but that may not be nearly as important as, and you insert some other things in here. And then I also think it changes, you know, what happens if you're an empty nester, right? Your children have all left, taking care of your family. You know, taking care of your family now could be, in my case, taking care of my wife. And that may mean something different than it did when all my children were small, or even mean something different when my children are older. So that doesn't mean it's an instant, like, easy answer to all of your problems, but it does give a structure and a way to begin to ask questions to navigate through finding answers to your challenges that you have.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point of nuance that you brought out there, is that for different people in different life stages, they can and should look different. I don't think that's a particularly controversial thing, but it's something that we often forget, and I think ends up causing a lot of the generational tension that we've all experienced at some point or another, is just, you know, somebody in a different life stage looking at a younger or an older person and saying, how in the world does that decision make sense? And the answer a lot of the times is just a different set of priorities, which may potentially be wrong, but most of the time are just different, and there's a multitude of reasons behind why they're different, and that's completely fine. I think especially for those of us who are Christians, circling this all the way back to the origin of this conversation, is that I think it just helps us to get away from this sort of numbers game and evaluation of our success in what God is calling us to do, in just trying to find something to measure against, trying to find some number or some way that we can make ourselves feel better, and more just trying to, it's more of an alignment game is what it seems like it is. It's much more trying to align yourself with Christ first and foremost, and then with the set of priorities that that you've determined, hopefully through prayer, wisdom, and counsel that that God has placed in your life. And then you're able to have a much better framework for making those decisions that isn't just, am I doing 15% better than my neighbor? Because then the focus isn't on comparison, the focus is just on mission.
Maybe one last caveat before we wrap this up that is helpful to make sure we observe is that I also think that prioritization is helpful, but that God's unique giftings and the places he put where he places you and your family can seriously change how you make this decision. And as a quick example, I think that there are families that I know, and I'm thinking of specifically some right now, who would say that to take care of their family would mean living in an area that maybe has less economic opportunity, but tremendous family and church opportunity. And that is exactly the right decision for them. And they made that decision. That's the best way to take care of their family. And looking from the outside, it looks like that's been tremendously successful for them in terms of taking care of their family. I can also think of families, and I'm thinking of multiple ones here, that are in a situation where the best way to take care of their family is to move frequently, move overseas, do different things, right? In other words, that decision is not made just for professional reasons. There's a unique family culture that they have that has really bonded them because they've lived in different places. And while I'm a big proponent of local community, because I think it's sometimes overlooked or not given enough weight to. I can think of multiple examples of families who are not local, but yet have built really rich family cultures because of the breadth of their experience and the fact that their family's really tight because they're the people that they know when they go to these different places because they're changing all the time. And so in each of those decisions, taking care of your family meant different things. And that had less to do maybe not with economics and more to do with the unique family or the unique people or the giftings that God has given those people. And so, again, I want to make sure that, you know, that this is not like a formula. Like, the way to take care of your family is to do blank. And hopefully the story of, you know, my own family is an example of that. But just make sure that we really explicitly state, no, it has a lot to do with who you are and what God has gifted you with and the situations he's put you in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think that's very worth noting. And, you know, for example, in the example of those two families, like the traveling family, maybe they wouldn't necessarily put it's important for our family to travel and get different experiences as one of their top three, but it's probably in their top 10, and that reinforces the take care of the family top two or three priority. And so you have to be able to look at it within the full context of just how they prioritize them. And ultimately, I think that does a lot come down to just how God has made you and the people that you are around and just the callings that he has for you. And that is incredibly unique for every individual person. And so I think we do a disservice to ourselves, to others, and ultimately to the creativity of God when we try to pigeonhole everyone into one specific vision of what the ideal Christian life should look like. And obviously it should not look like it's in you know, going against the commands of God and against Scripture, but within that there's a lot of different things that it can look like, and I think that should be a really freeing and empowering thing for us when we take a second to fully let sink in what that means.
Well, to summarize, I think if we got you got anything out of this podcast, it would be just take a moment to think about the invisible ideas that are driving your actions and make sure that you have a chance to sort of look at them, be fully awake and make those decisions. And then as you consider those ideas and you're trying to sort them out, consider this. And listen carefully. Don't hear this as, and the way to fix this is this, that consider that one of the tools you can use is to sort of set some priorities and think about, you know, facing those decisions and evaluating those ideas in terms of priorities. What are my priorities? Have I thought about that? And then with that in mind, let me look at these ideas. Let me look at those options. Do they conform to the priorities that I have chosen? And if and that gives you a framework, a starting point, and a way to kind of navigate that, realizing that that's going to be very unique based on your unique giftings, your position in life, what God has put in front of you, and what God is calling you to do. I hope this has been a helpful conversation. It's helpful for me just thinking about it. And David, you asked good questions and pushed back on some interesting things here. And this is the kind of stuff that gets me excited because, you know, it sounds a little bit, I don't know, academic or esoteric in some ways. And yet, this is the kind of thing that if you think about it and lean into it, you sort of see through the veil a little bit. You understand the game that's being played that most people don't really understand. And I get excited about those things. When you do that, then all of a sudden everything's different. You can live in a way that's different and often more effective. And that can be exciting. So we would like to just encourage you in doing that and thinking about that and living that more effective life. And until next time, be unbound.